You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, we got a lot of guests on the show, but none will weave as a fascinating tale as you are about to hear. Author of Castro's Nemesis, True Stories of a Master Spycatcher, Chris Simmons is back with us. And Chris, hey, we've seen you on CNN, NBC, Fox, all of them. And your books, when you're reading a book that you've written, it almost seems like it's too outrageous to be true. And yet the stories in this book are true, aren't they?
Yes, they are. In fact, I had several editors call me when they were reviewing the book and said, "I thought you said this was a nonfiction story," and I had to convince them that real life is actually better than any fantasy work you're ever going to read.
That's great. Well, you know, Mark Twain was the one who said, truth is stranger than fiction. Fiction is limited by the imagination. Truth isn't. And that would definitely apply in this case, huh?
Yes, it would.
Yeah. So this idea, like Cuba had a massive spy ring going on in the United States. You mentioned they had infiltrated the highest levels of the intelligence community. And how did it get unraveled?
It got unraveled. The FBI had an unidentified subject case, what we call an unsub, that they had been working for several years. And an unsub case by itself is not unusual. Our office, for example, generally had about 6 unsub cases going on at any one time, just waiting for that day you had enough of those puzzle pieces to make it an investigation versus simply an unsub. So long story short, after 3 years of working with 3 puzzle pieces, they had narrowed it down to 1 of 10,000 people somewhere in the United States working in the intelligence community. And some frustrated team members came to us, laid out their 3 puzzle pieces, and basically said, "We heard you're the best on Cuba there is, and we hope that's true." And we happened to have the 4th puzzle piece, which literally in the span of minutes took that 10,000 candidate pool down to 50 people. And from there, the investigation hit high speed, and 3 weeks later, we had identified our suspect.
Yeah. What's it feel like when they come to you, they have no idea what's going on, and then you break the case? How does that feel when you do it?
That was very gratifying. It then became, and I hate to use the word surreal, but that's the word that fits best, because the subject worked 6 floors above us, and we knew her professionally. And during the course of our investigation, we would actually spend our mornings working against her, and then that afternoon have to go to a meeting with her. But it put us in a very unique position, because we were the only participants in the investigation that actually had reason to see her each and every day if we needed. So we were able to provide the Bureau with real-time feedback on what her behavior was today, especially once she went under constant surveillance. There were moments where they thought she had detected the surveillance team, and we were able to use certain ploys to reassure them that they were still good.
So was there any outward signs, any behavior that she was doing that would have led to any suspicion of her prior to putting these puzzle pieces together?
There had been a few over the years, but all of them were discounted. There was actually, when she worked for the Department of Justice before coming to our spy agency, one of her colleagues actually went on record saying he would not trust her with national security secrets because he questioned her loyalty. But investigators at the time thought he must have been a malcontent because everybody else seemed pleased with her work ethic. And he was discounted and later came back to haunt us.
Hey, you know, I think finding spies is a lot like dating. These red flags go up, no pun intended, and then you ignore them at your peril, right?
Absolutely. There's always a trail. It's just a matter of, did someone see it at the time?
Mm-hmm. And so what do you learn from this? That's what I want to know. What's a lesson in life that you can take from this? And what's a lesson intelligence that you can take from it?
Well, the life lesson, I'm a bit jaded. My life lesson was don't trust anybody. But that's a
little... Oh, that's so bad. You can't go through life that way, though, right?
Correct. I guess a better way to look at it would be people's behavior. Don't listen to what people say. Watch
what they do.
Because their behavior will tell you the truth every time.
So has this worked in your own personal relationships? I don't want to get too personal with you, but in your own relationships with friends, family, do you find this to be the case?
Yes. And sadly, the times where I crash and burn in a relationship was because the signs were there and I chose to ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
Much like happens in any espionage case or anything else.
Yeah. So this subject you had, as in life, she had more red flags than a May Day parade in Seattle, huh?
Yeah. Yes, she did. She tried to minimize the anomalies, but you simply cannot commit your life to espionage and think for a second that you're going to look and act like everybody else. It just doesn't work out that way. If you're leading a double life, there will in fact be your work life and the other side. But in her case, what she tried to do was became very much a loner and always keep people at a distance, no close friendships to mitigate the risk.
Hey, so there's a guy by the name of Joe Navarro, former, you know, Joe?
I know of him, yes.
Yeah, so he's former FBI counterintelligence officer, recognized expert on nonverbal behavior. And he tells a story, and my son backs this up, that his father had a hardware store in Little Havana in Miami. And he watched a guy come in, and he instantly knew that the guy wasn't shopping, that he was there to try to steal money out of the till. And he screamed out to his father, lock the cash register. And the guy ran out. And my son worked in retail, and he would observe people, and he could instantly pick out the shoplifters. So how do you train people to actually be able to hone in on the types of behaviors that this person in question here had? And by the way, she's in prison now. You mentioned she's due to get out in a year or so. How do you train people to really pick up and recognize those red flags? Because human nature is basically, we rationalize ambiguities rather than searching or investigating further.
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Goldterra Resource Corp is a gold exploration company that has assembled a highly prospective district-scale land position on the doorstep of the city of Yellowknife in Canada's Northwest Territories. Goldterra is currently focused on expanding and delineating gold resources at the company's Yellowknife City Gold Project with a goal of discovering over 5 million ounces. With ready access to infrastructure and multiple high-grade gold discoveries, Goldterra is on track to re-establishing Yellowknife as one of the premier gold mining districts in Canada. Goldterra trades as YGT in Toronto and YGTFF on the OTC. For more information, go to goldterracorp.com. That's goldterracorp.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yes, there is understandably lots of training that goes into body language and speech analysis, but it really comes down to, as people, we over-communicate. Our body and our vocals and the tone of our voice all want to work together there's a natural redundancy, if you will, and to reinforce the message we're trying to send. So what happens when we try to deceive the voice? You can change the voice, that what you say, how you say it, then your inflection, but the body will naturally resist. And it's, for most people, that's the hardest part to modify. So you're going to see the tells. And I know even when I was, before I retired, even with all my experience, if I was lying, there was one, I had a facial gesture I would make in the middle of a lie, which I did not know I was doing, and I got caught.
You had a tell.
I had a tell, and there were only a couple people, thankfully, that recognized it. Everybody else I could fool. But I bring that up to show that no matter who you are and how strongly you believe in the role you're playing, your body will betray you. And something we used to do with young agents to train them and get them familiar is just go out to restaurants and watch. And we would play the game, so to speak, by, you know, just looking around and then say, all right, there are at least two couples here on their first date. Look around and tell me what they're doing that tells, you know, that reveals that. And then we just, throughout the night, just continue with, all right, there's a couple married couples that the relationship isn't good. Where are they sitting? And how do you know? And it's quite stunning, actually, just to, if you sit and watch for an hour, how much you can learn from people without asking them a thing.
So true. So true. You know, I read an article that said that 70% of all communication is nonverbal. And me and my ex, we had that beat. 100% of our communication was nonverbal. So, but yeah, picking up on those nonverbal cues. I got a book when I was a kid in high school called Body Language by this guy, Fast. It was the first book ever published on body language. And you do this little drill. You're sitting at a table and there's a salt and pepper shaker. And what you do is you move it over gradually to the other side of the table to the person you're sitting opposite. And then you sit back and watch. And 95% of the time, that person will unconsciously take those salt and pepper shakers and move them back on your side, or move them to neutral territory. So like you say, human behavior, you know, is just, it's ingrained. And like you say, it's what you do, not what you say.
Oh, absolutely. And I think a key takeaway for people is to understand that we are emotional creatures. We like to think that we're rational and logical, but every decision you're ever going to make in life is based on emotion. Mm. And then we use our logic to reinforce the idea that we made the right decision. And that's where people so often make mistakes, because you will assume that, whether it's a relationship or a coworker, that they're going to do what, and you've heard people say before, that wasn't in their best interest. Mm. Well, best interest is logical. What you have to ask yourself is, what is in their self-interest? And that goes back to their identity. And the example I always use is, when a soldier jumps on a grenade, it's because he or she felt they didn't have a choice. They were sacrificing themselves because they loved their buddies. And they were, that was part of who they were. There was no other route. And so as soon as you understand, again, step away from the logic and think, as an emotional person, what is it that what do they want? And that works. It works for anybody, whether it's a personal relationship. We use it against spies, use it quite effectively against terrorists. And in Iraq, I had the highest success rate getting terrorists to switch sides, not because they wanted to, but because they were following their self-interest.
Hmm. And I guess there's a lesson in that. Yeah. If we weren't emotional creatures, then the average car would be 20 years old, not 10, right?
Absolutely. Well, and when we talk about the emotional and the body language, we need to realize that no matter where you are in life, the average person is barely, you have a, about a 50-50 chance of making the right call on a body someone's body language, because there's so many biases that we have. Mm. One, for example, a lot of people, they'll read some of the books and assume that the rules are the same for everybody, and the rules aren't. Those rules are guidelines. So when you're working on enhancing a relationship with someone, again, watch their mannerisms, their behavior, how they respond, because what's true for others may not be applicable in their case. So yeah. You have to have, you know, by all means, understand the rules of body language, you know, how to mirror image, what it means, how to understand when someone's comfortable with you. But if that rule doesn't apply in that person, throw it away and go on to the next one.
Right. It's very contextual, in other words. And that's what you always have to remember, that it's the context. There are certain universal ones, like when you have your hands folded in front of you, that's definitely a defensive kind of gesture for virtually anyone. But when somebody touches their face, you can't automatically assume deceit, right? I mean, there could be other reasons why they do it. It's just a habit or whatever, right?
Correct. And when you talk about folding your arms, anytime someone puts a barrier, whether it's their arms or a table, or they're sending a message. They want that distance, or they're showing superiority. Mm-hmm. When those barriers go down, or say you're sitting at a table, but you're sitting catacorner versus across from them, now you change the dynamic. And so there's a lot of ways to work through those barriers. And as you indicate, when you see the barriers coming up, just back up, give them time to relax, and try again.
So it's a psyops there, little psyops.
I like to think of it as persistence.
Yeah. Well, one thing I like to do is, when I meet somebody for the first time at a meeting, I generally try to keep my hands like just holding my legs so they can't get any read on what I'm doing. Now, somebody like you would say he's hiding something, he's holding back, and you would be right. But the average person who might just intuitively pick up body language generally is not going to know.
No, they wouldn't. They would go in cold thinking that's just how you are. Whereas someone who had been watching you would say, you go into every interaction from that stance.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Guarded. Because I know how to pick up those cues. I wouldn't say I'm the best. I'm certainly no Joe Navarro, but I'm pretty good at it. And I figure if I can do it, then other people can. And I don't want to give them a head start. They're going to have to figure it out on their own. Right?
Yes.
It is fascinating, this whole thing of really utilizing nonverbal communication to your advantage, whether you're catching spies or making friends or whatever. And so the book, really something you want to get, Castro's Nemesis, True Stories of a Master Spy Catcher. It reads like a John le Carre spy novel, but it's not a novel. It is the truth. So truth is stranger than fiction. You can get it on Amazon. We'll have a link in the show notes to this interview on Financial Survival Network, or wherever fine books used to be sold. And Chris, it's really great to have you back on. And I could talk to you about body language and how to use that for hours. So maybe we'll talk about it again soon, because your ability to do it has led to countless bad guys being purged from the ranks. We appreciate your service, your work. If you got a question for Chris, shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. Put comments up on the YouTube channel. I'll get back to you on them. Chris, been a pleasure. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.